Appropriation Committee meeting and to open a work session on House Bill 2393. We have an amendment on there. Janet, can you sort of get us caught up to speed where we're at with this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2393 is from a while back, February 14th. It was the bill that would allow 16 and 17-year-olds who apply for Oregon driver's licenses to substitute an instruction permit from another jurisdiction for the requirement that he or she have an Oregon instruction permit for 6 months prior to obtaining the license. There were several questions when you first heard this bill that we've had answered since then, and one of them required an amendment. The other two did not. The amendment you have is the Dash 1 amendment, and it narrows the qualifying out-of-state instruction permits from other jurisdictions to, say, other states and the District of Columbia. The committee wasn't as comfortable with instruction driving permits from other countries, so that would be another state instruction driving permit. And the other two questions, one had to do with whether testing is required, if the testing would be required under the bill, because the testing, first test that you take to get your instruction permit is a rules of the road, Oregon rules of the road test, and the committee wanted to be sure that the applicant had that first test as well as the written test and the behind the wheel test for their license. And that test would be required if the way the bill is written. So that was one of your questions. And the final question had to do with whether a partial 6 months in another state would be acceptable to the department, and whether that the bill needed an amendment. Legislative Council said if we make it clear on the record that 3 months, say, or 2 months in another state would supplement for 2 months, and you would only have to get a four-month learner's permit in this state. And they said if we make that clear on the record that it does apply to the partial 6 months, that would be satisfactory. That is the thing, however, that adds some costs and programming costs to the Department of Transportation. Kelly Taylor is kind of jumping back and forth between two meetings, so if you have questions for her, she may be in later. She said the fiscal for the programming, if it was the entire 6 months, would be about $8,000. It would be more like about $20,000 or $25,000 for the programming costs to make partial months apply. So, Mr. Chair, that's what I have. The Hobsons are here, and Gary Pello from Representative Backlund's office, and Troy Costales is here from the Department of Transportation. If you have any questions, however, about for Kelly, she is not here at this time.
Thank you, Janet. The chair would move the Dash 1s to 2393 be adopted. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Since not, we adopt the Dash 1 amendments to 2393. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2393 with the Dash 1 amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
The Representative Mabry moves House Bill 2393 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Blair.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. Today I'm going to vote no on this bill. I really don't know that it's necessary. The program is working very well. I don't think a little extra driving ever hurts anybody before they get their license. And also discovering there is a fiscal on it just makes it a little more clear in my mind. So I'm a no vote on this today.
Thank you, Representative. Any other discussion? Janet?
And I just wanted to have the committee make it clear. I said if you made it clear that it applies to partial months, do you want to make that clear? Is that the way you're intending it to be, that partial months would apply?
That they've completed in other states.
Right.
Fulfilled the 6 months.
That if you have two months in Kentucky, that you just need your four months here then.
I don't,
Representative Greenland.
Yeah, no, it seems to me with extra fiscal and other things, I think that's not the way we ought to go with it. I think if it's 6 months and another state may have completed it, I would go with that. If not, start it over.
Okay.
I don't think we need to have them rewrite their whole system to be over.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, Ryan, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Greenlight.
Aye.
Representative Mabry.
Aye.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Beyer.
No.
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Having received the constitutional majority, the measure passes. I'll need a carrier on the floor.
Do you want to check first and see if Representative Backman wants to carry it first, or what's your thought? Or who?
Yeah, we'll check and see if Representative Backman will carry the bill then.
Mm-hmm. You want to carry it?
Okay. Chairman?
Representative Mabry.
I would just like to compliment the young man whose name escapes me right now, and I won't take the time to look it up. I apologize for that. But Matt, thank you. Right. He recognized a problem. Most young men would have been intimidated and probably walked away. He acted very responsibly in working toward having this passed. And I'd just like to congratulate him. I think that's terrific to see young people get involved that way.
I'll second that. Yeah. Representative Backlund, would you like to carry the bill, House Bill 2393?
I can make an attempt.
we passed it.
It's already passed out. It's
great. Great.
You've got 6 votes. If you want to go for 5.
maybe then, Representative, I should say thank you very much and then abandon the room here. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. We'll open the work session on House Bill 2338. Oh, okay. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2338. Representative Chatterley needs to be here for that one. So we'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2801. Janet, you want to give us a rundown on the bill, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2801 is an increased regulation and civil penalty authority for the regulation of auto wreckers. I want to point out before I forget that this bill does have a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee. The bill does provide civil penalty authority to the Department of Transportation of up to $1,000 for violation of vehicle wrecker regulations. That's in the end of Section 7 of the bill. That's in Section 5 of the bill. And up to $5,000 for operating without a wrecker's license or certificate, and that's at the end of Section 7 of the bill. The bill also increases the level of bond required for wreckers from $2,000 to $40,000, so a significant increase in bond level, and that's in Section 10 of the bill. It disallows wreckers from removing parts or dismantling or destroying a vehicle prior to obtaining an ownership record or title of the vehicle. It requires wreckers to physically separate or to visually label vehicles for which they have no ownership documents so that they can be identified by the Department of Transportation or by a law enforcement agency at their facilities. Another change from current law is that it requires an on-site inspection prior to certification from my reading of the bill, prior to each three-year renewal, a visual inspection on-site by the Department of Transportation or someone that might be contracted to do that. It specifies record-keeping requirements and changes the fee for a wrecker certificate, both at issuance and renewal. Current fee is $150, and the changes are in Section 16, but they're left blank. That's on page 9. Right at the beginning of Section 16, the fee for issuance currently $150, and it moves to a blank amount. And the fee for renewal is in line 18, and that's also a blank amount.
We need to fill that in, Jen.
Well, that can also be filled in at the Ways and Means Committee, but we wouldn't be able to get a fiscal statement unless we filled in the blank. And the agency or the association may have a suggestion. The Department of Transportation has worked with the association on this bill. It's my understanding there may be additional an amendment required, but they can talk about that this morning. It's currently a Class A misdemeanor to operate without a certificate, but again, this would add civil penalty authority to get have the agency be able to do something without bringing in a district attorney to prosecute someone. Was also going to mention that the department has cease and desist orders added, and that's in Section 15. And I think that's all I was going to say, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Janet. Could I have Deb Elkins, please?
Good morning, members of the committee. As you know, my name is Deb Elkins. I'm the director of the Northwest Automotive Trades Association. I represent the folks that crafted this bill, the auto recyclers of Oregon. I have an advisory committee that has met over the last year examining legislation from other states. They've looked at Washington's and some others around the country to try to come up with the document that you have before you. They're committed to raising the standard of their industry. You've probably heard this before from other industries, and we're here today to ask you the same thing. I am not the technical person to try to give you all of the ins and outs of why they want these regulations. I think Janet's done a great job of giving you an overview of the bill and what it is we're asking. I have with me today three members of that advisory committee that I've had working on this bill for the last year. They represent three different sizes of auto recycling yards, one a very small family-owned business, one a statewide multiple location operation, and an international auto recycling organization as well. So I'm going to turn it over to them and let them begin to give you some testimony on why they feel that this legislation is so important. So first, Mark.
Chairman Brown and members of the committee, like Deb said, we began this operation several years ago to try and
Can you identify yourself?
I'm sorry. Please. My name is Mark Forkum. I'm with Foss Auto Parts, Brad's Auto and Truck Parts, and You Pull It Auto Wrecking. Like Deb said, as a committee, we formed a group several years ago to work on various issues of what concerns we had in our industry. There were several concerns in the area of best management practices, and one of the areas we decided to attack first was the record keeping and the rules that govern our industry. Quite frankly, the rules that are on the plate for us right now, we get no bang for our buck. There is no record keeping requirements in there. There's no accountability for the auto recycler, and there's no way for DMV to enforce or even come to look at our industry to see what problems there may or may not be. Our industry, you know, as the end, the last line of defense for DMV, we're required to process a lot of paperwork. In the current rules, we have no guidance, no help from DMV as to what we're supposed to do with this paperwork. We feel that these changes that we have in the rules will help not only us but future recyclers and the current recyclers as far as get rid of the gray issues, define what we're supposed to do, and make a clear cut as far as what's right and what's wrong. Some of the things that I wanted to just touch on. With my technical glitches here. Some of the areas that Again, just the overview is that this House Bill 2801, it adds accountability to the auto recycler. It also enables DMV and law enforcement as to inspect our facility. Right now, there isn't a means for a DMV official to actually inspect a facility. If a DMV officer was to come in, there's no rules as to what he should look for, what he shouldn't look for. We feel that's unfair for both ends of the, as far as for the operator and for a DMV official. This bill will give us specific guidelines as to what to, how to mark vehicles, what paperwork to process, and it makes it clear cut. Section 6 defines rules as separation of vehicles with ownership documents. Right now, you could it doesn't require you to separate vehicles that you own or don't own, so it's kind of a mixed bag out there. If a DMV or police officer went to inspect a facility, he couldn't tell what car was available for parts or what vehicle wasn't available for parts. Section 7, and this is what we're strong on as a committee, that it allows DMV to assess penalties. Right now, the only offense for being an unlicensed recycler is a Class A misdemeanor. We get no help from the police department, and frankly, we feel it should be something that DMV should be more involved in, because most of the time it's strictly paperwork issues, and that's something that that we know DMV wants to help us with, and it's and as a committee we feel the guidelines that we have is something that's really easy to live by. It's something that we've done for years, from a small operation to the multi-store operations. It's just simple best management practices and doing good housekeeping. On the bond issue, we felt strong about sending the bond to equal the used car dealer's bond. It's just something that to level the playing field with everybody in the used car industry. The bond, frankly, if you can't qualify for a $40,000 bond in today's business place, especially in the auto recycling industry, you might think about, as us doing dealer transactions between yourself, I wouldn't feel comfortable dealing with somebody that couldn't qualify for a bond. Section 11 increases license period to 3 years instead of going through this process every year. We feel once we're licensed, going every 3 years is not too much to ask for. It's actually less paperwork burden on ourselves and for DMV. It establishes rules by technical assistance, training and inspection by the department. We've all had to learn it by the seat of our pants. DMV hasn't been required or doesn't have the, wasn't required for the auto recyclers to give us technical assistance on how to properly process paperwork, such as the used car, the dealer training that used car dealers have. That's something that we feel should be just part of what we should be paying our records fee for, is to get some bang for a buck. Instead of right now, we pay our fee and we get nothing in return. We get no accountability. We get no enforcement, and we get no help. And then Section 13, again, as Ms. Edkin said, allows the department to inspect our facility. And, the goal for all of us is to, we want to bring everybody else up to minimum standards. Oregon is a very progressive state. We have some of the best auto recyclers in the nation. We as a group in an industry want to bring everybody else up to, to set minimum standards, because now only do we have some of the best recycling facilities, we also have some of the worst, and we need to at least bring those people up to level playing field, and set the bar at a minimum level, and we're here as committed to help those people attain that goal. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, Terry?
I have a couple. No big deal. Where it says you require an on-site technical assistance inspection prior to your renewal, that's obviously something that you're not doing now?
Correct.
And who is this DMV that would be coming in to do this?
Well, our goal is, what we hope to get out of this is, we'd like to get one person in DMV that was, quote, an expert in our field, and we're willing to pay for that person. We want somebody that you know, can teach us or teach our industry what paperwork to, you know, how to properly handle the paperwork. We'd like to establish within our organization, I mean, set best management practices. We'd like to educate DMV what's doable and what isn't doable. Just about anything is doable. And as the way the laws are written right now, record keeping isn't a requirement, which is ridiculous. So if DMV, you know, if we're required to keep records, we want DMV to help us and train what, you know, what records should we keep and what order should the process be done. Right now, if a person goes down and gets a records license, you get no help, and you know, they just assume that you already know what you're supposed to do, and that isn't the case.
Okay, and one quick other one. And then the one requiring vehicles and components to be stored behind a fence, is that more just to kind of clean up the whole state? Because I know certain cities have regulations at this point, but
just another
not everyone.
Right? Sorry to interrupt. Just another clarification issue. We just wanted to try and get rid of the gray areas and make things in black and white. It's also, yeah, to increase the bar, the standards. You can go around to lots of auto recycling facilities, and I'll use that terminology real nice for some of those people, and they've got stuff piled everywhere. Well, it's just to define how our industry, you know, the best management practices our industry should follow.
Thank you.
Doesn't under Lady Bird Johnson's Beautification Act from back in the 60s, wasn't there some requirements put on record yards then to create fences and visual barriers to the highways?
You're probably right there, but that's the problem. Is and under the current Oregon laws, there isn't any federal guidelines that I'm aware of, and we just wanted to clarify it so that way in our state statute and our Oregon laws we clarified those issues and made that part of the requirements.
And if
go ahead.
Oh, if I might just add, Chair Brown, I think that's probably true that there are some federal regulations. Problem is, in Oregon right now, we have it looks like a patchwork quilt. We have different municipalities allowing different kinds of practices. There are some that adhere to the rules and others that do not. And kind of in follow-up to Representative Beyer, I think it's our goal is to find some consistent means and standard for, you know, statewide, so that all recyclers know how to operate, and also it looks better.
I assume that you must be subject to some types of inspection from DEQ regarding the handling of hazardous materials.
I'm smiling because you would think so, but I'm probably one of the few yards that have had a DMV or a DEQ inspector through our facility. And, you know, they'll tend to go after the people with the deepest pockets and ignore somebody else right down the street. We get very little help in that department, and it's kind of like one of the programs. If you file all the proper DEQ documentation like you're supposed to file, stormwater permits, etc., then they might look at you. If you don't file it, you know, they don't see you. You stay out of the radar, and that's part of what we want to, you know, close the loopholes.
Thank you. Other questions, John?
I was tempted, because nobody likes fee increases, to ask how low you want the fees reduced to, but I will not go there. I'm assuming, since you're looking for help in partnering, you expect that fee would be increased.
Right.
Do you have a number in mind? I mean, surely if we said $5,000, you'd fall backwards over your seat. So you must have some kind of ballparking.
Well, currently the fee is $150 a year. We would anticipate the fee would, that's per year, we would anticipate the fee would probably at least double, if not, you know, go to $400 or $500 a year. That would be, you know, we would expect that.
Thank you.
And if I might follow up, Representative Mabry, we had preliminary discussions with DMV while we were working through this legislation, our draft, and asked them to give us some sort of a ballpark on what it would take. And doubling was kind of where they were at that time. And those in our industry that we've asked the question, are you willing to, you know, have your fees double to get this type of oversight, they were very willing to do that.
If I may interject also, part of the reason why we want to go to a three-year renewal term also, currently, like in the city, we have stores in different locations, but currently in the city of Portland, in order for you to go downtown to have your license stamped that, yes, you're within an industrial zone, they charge you $150 for that service. So if we could cut that nonsense out, and I'd rather pay $150 more to get something for my money than just to have somebody rubber stamp my renewal certificate. And that's what we discussed too. I mean, Marion County at $75. Each area has its different fees, and those don't generate anything for us. It's just administrative costs.
Mr. Chair, I have a question regarding that because I wasn't aware that. So at this point, I'm just trying to understand, do you pay a fee to DMV and then an additional fee to the city and county?
That's correct.
So under this scenario, this bill, the city or county, would they still charge a fee?
We don't have any control over that. That's a fee that they charge strictly as an administrative cost to look at your application, and basically it's to look up in a zoning map and see, do you fall under industrial zoning or classification? And yes or no?
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So, because my understanding is the money does go for different things. This is going to DMV for inspection, and like you said, the city or county, it's for their local land use.
Correct. And they still, we're not.
So you're not advocating for those to go away. Okay.
No, we're not advocating that they go away. They're still going to charge what they're going to charge. But we just feel, instead of, you know, some of us have been in business for 40 years. I've been doing this for 25 years. You know, we have a heck of an investment in our facilities, and we're not going to go away tomorrow. So, you know, that's why we feel if we were there on a three-year renewal, it would just save us, frankly, just save us some paperwork. That's just redundant work.
Thank you.
Representative's honor.
Mr. Chair, one quick question. Is this going to make it a little tougher on the thieves that steal a car and dismantle it and stuff?
Exactly. One of the issues that's in this bill talks about selling parts, a requirement that each car that you buy is issued a stock number, and that parts you sell, you must sell your parts, and on that invoice, you must have the stock number, VIN number of that part. Well, again, that just adds accountability to selling parts. That if you're not trying to hide something, you've got no reason to hide your VIN numbers and your stock numbers and where you got your merchandise.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm Representative Greenland.
Yes, I'm sorry I had to step up out for a moment and I may have missed this, but I'm a freshman, so new things happen. But it seems unusual that industry comes in asking for 8-page single spaces of regulation. So it naturally leads me to the question, what's the problem that's to be solved by this legislation, and what's the magnitude of that problem?
The magnitude of the problem right now, we feel that we're better off being unlicensed than we are licensed, and that's basically the feeling within our industry. If you go down a major thoroughfare in Portland, there's probably 20 auto recyclers on that boulevard, and two of them are licensed. There's no accountability. There's nobody to go after anybody except for it being a Class A misdemeanor. And frankly, in the city of Portland anyway, they don't have time for that. This business is too important not only to us as an industry, but it's too important for the viability of you know, people that live here. We have a responsibility to process vehicles, to do it efficiently, environmentally friendly, and you know, frankly, turn our paperwork in on time and with some regulations. Right now, there isn't any. Under the old statute, there isn't record-keeping requirements. There isn't best management practice requirements. There isn't on-site visits. There's no technical assistance. Today's car is more complex. There's more concern for the environment, and we feel as an industry it's our responsibility to step up to the plate and be the leaders instead of, you know, sitting on the sideline.
I may follow up.
So you expect that the consequences of this is that you go down that street and there are 2 out of 10 regulated now and 8 out of 10 not regulated. You expect that the consequences will be the other 8 will become regulated or they'll go away?
It's our hope that they'll become regulated, they'll become licensed, and they'll become that we can level the playing field as far as the accountability issues. It's not our intention of these rules to put somebody out of business. Competition breeds success for us, and it's good for the industry. We want people to get the help, and right now, if somebody had a problem, there's no way for them to get help, either within the industry or within the state, in order to help them run their business effectively or what paperwork questions to ask. There's no rules.
Committee, I'm going to recess the hearing on this bill at 2801, and we have Representative Shetterly is here, and then we'll handle the work session on 2338 and then come back to this, if that's okay.
Okay.
And so we're in recess there, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2338. Janet, can you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Get us up to speed on it.
This bill also was heard about a month ago. It would prohibit carrying a minor in the open bed of a motor vehicle. It provides exceptions for if the minor is secured with a safety belt or harness, or the vehicle is being operated in a parade or some kind of an exhibition. The current bill, the way the bill is written, has an exception for a family member being transported in the course of farming or ranching activities. The Dash 2 amendments, and you had the Dash 2 amendments at the hearing, so they should be still in your material in your folder. If you need another copy, we have some more. The Dash 2 amendments replace that exception in the original bill for family members of farmers and ranchers to read that the exception applies in the course and scope of employment, provided that the minor is transported in compliance with laws and rules regulating the transport of workers. And there is in the original bill an exception also for hunting, to and from a hunting camp or between hunting sites during hunting season. Mr. Chair, that's just to kind of bring you back up to speed.
Are we also still considering the Dash 1 amendments?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shetterly has a preference there, and I guess I'll let him talk to that.
Thank you, Janet. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Lane Shetterly, State Representative, District 23. I appreciate your work session on this bill this morning. Mr. Chair, in answer to Representative Greenlick's question, I'll take you back through these amendments. If you recall, on the Dash 2 amendments, there was some concern raised by a representative of the Farm Bureau at this last meeting as to the extent to which these amendments would apply, and I think they indicated perhaps some preference for the language of the original bill from between lines 17 through 20. Since then, I have had conversation both with Farm Bureau and with Senator Beyer, for whom this was this particular exception was important during the last session, and we have reached agreement that the Dash 2 amendments are satisfactory. In fact, they're preferable to me over the language of the bill as drafted. Because the exemption will relate to minors being transported in employment when there are rules and laws regulating the transport of workers, so you already have an overlay there of regulations regarding safety and transport. I was asked to, and will make it clear, of course, that a farmer or a rancher certainly can employ a family member, and by that employment come within this definition or within this exemption as long as they are transporting their child employee in compliance with the whatever rules apply to the transport of employees generally. That's the Dash 2 amendments. On the Dash 1 amendments, those were requested by the Department of Transportation. And frankly, it's your bill now. It's in work session. My preference would be not to adopt the Dash 1 amendments. Distance limitation, I think, does create some questions as far as enforceability goes. How will a police officer know whether the child is being transported for 5 miles or less? But most importantly, the 10-mile-per-hour limitation, to be honest, I think that traveling 10 miles an hour on a state highway probably creates more safety risk than traveling at just the speed of traffic. We do cite vehicles, for instance, for impeding traffic because it is a safety issue when you get a vehicle traveling too slow out on a state highway, county road, and maybe impeding traffic. I think the trade-offs there are that the exemptions are limited enough that, frankly, I don't need the Dash 1 amendments for my purpose. But again, it's your bill. But that would be my preference in going forward. I spoke with Al Elkins this morning. He just stopped by my office about 8:15 to say that he's concerned on the hunting and exemption that there are hunters that have been issued disabled licenses, I guess, for disabled hunters, and concerned how that might affect who gets to sit in the cab of a pickup. I'm not sure that that's an issue. I think Mr. Elkins said that he would mention it, and I think he has mentioned it to the chair. I'm happy to bird dog that through if this becomes an issue and needs to be addressed on the Senate side. I'm not positive that it is, but if we need to look at it, we will. My preference this morning would be to move this bill with the Dash 2 amendments if it's the committee's pleasure to do that and get this on its way. I appreciate that. I'd be glad to answer questions.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions? Don't look like it. Thank you. Al Elkins, did you want to testify on this morning?
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Al Elkins with the Oregon Hunters Association. I appreciate Representative Shetterly's bringing to your attention the concern I had. As of February of this year, the Department of Fish and Wildlife has issued over 11,000 permanent disability permits for hunters, and my concern was how this was all going to fit together with Section lines 14, 15, and 16 in the bill. If in fact a disabled person couldn't get in the back of a pickup, and I have asked Representative Shetterly if he and I could work on this before the Senate hearing, and he said he would listen and we could talk about this issue. So we will do that.
Thank you, Al.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may, I apologize for not having brought that forward. Mr. Elkins just stopped in my office at 8:15 this morning, and if I'd known, we could have worked this out a couple weeks ago. But at this point, my preference, if the committee is willing to indulge, would be to move this forward, and I'll work with him to see if this needs to be addressed in the first place. And then if it does, I'm sure it wouldn't be difficult to address by amendment if necessary in the Senate.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Is there anyone from the Department of Transportation wanted to? And they're shaking their head back there, so that's an all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Entertain a motion.
Sure. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2338 with the Dash 2 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
You need to adopt the
Dash 2
first.
Oh, I'm sorry. I move that we adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2338.
Representative Dingfelder moves Dash 2 amendments to 2338 be adopted. Is there any objection? Seeing none, there it goes.
Okay, Mr. Chair, now I will move House Bill 2338 with the Dash 2 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Dingfelder moves 2338 with the Dash 2 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Ryan, will you call the roll?
Representative Mabry.
Aye.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Beyer.
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Greenlee.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Shetterly will carry it on the floor for us.
Thank you.
And we'll reopen the hearing on House Bill 2801, and I want to apologize for the interruption. Deb, did the other two people up here want to give some testimony too?
I think Jim does.
Representative Brown and the rest of the members. My name is Jim Tursik. I represent LKQ John's Auto Parts. Like Mark mentioned, the state of Oregon has some of the most progressive auto wreckers in the state, right in our Portland area. Unfortunately, though, I'm involved with yards all around the country because our company is owned by a company out of Chicago. We have 43 plants representing 30 states. But unfortunately, here in Oregon, we have the most lax laws in the country. And I just wanted to reiterate that the things that Mark has been bringing up here, that we need to make some changes, and it's time to get into the 21st century here. So that's, I just wanted to mention that. So
thank you. Any other testimony?
Yeah.
Okay. Any questions? And so as I understand it now, the wrecking industry then is not regulated by the state or has very little regulation?
Chair Brown, has very little regulation. Think about purchasing a certificate for $150 and virtually not seeing anyone or having any oversight or any direction given to an industry, and that's virtually what we have right now. And that's not to, speak ill of DMV. It's just that the regulations have not been addressed in some 25 plus years, and the industry has changed dramatically in the last 25 years. So we need to, they're looking to get those regulations in concert with where their industry is. And also, I've learned just from working with them this past year about the degree of fraud that could occur in an auto recycling yard, which if you haven't already learned just from this short time with us, is they prefer auto recycling as opposed to wrecking. But yes, there is a lot of room for fraud, and this does give the DMV the authority to ensure that they're taking care of the paperwork the way they're supposed to. They are, think about it, they're dealing with the end of the life of the vehicle. And this vehicle has been treated with licensing and regulation up to its death, so to speak. And at the time of crushing, before it's crushed, we need to ensure that the information that needs to be carried forward is, in fact, carried forward properly.
And so if I heard it right, you don't get very many visits from the DEQ.
Well, we pride ourselves, the three at this table, again, we are some of the three most progressive auto recyclers in the nation, for that matter. We prefer not to get visits from DEQ is our main goal, and we subscribe to that theory, and that's what we want to promote to the rest of the industry by best management practices. Whereas a part of our national association, we're members of what's called a certified auto recycler, which by that means we maintain a certain level of compliance with environmental standards. We have set procedures, policy and procedures, and how we dismantle cars, how we handle the fluids from the oil and antifreeze and tires and batteries, mercury switches, the gasoline. It's quite complex, and that's what we want to stress and enforce, that this is something that the general public, they're basically allowed to do it without any regulation and without any consequences. And we just want to ensure that if you're going to get in the auto recycling business, that you get in the business and you understand what's required of you and what responsibilities are required. And that's what we want to teach and promote. We We, again, don't want this rule to constrict or hold anybody back. That's not the goal, and that's not the focus. The focus is strictly that we want to get something for our money. We want to have it written so we eliminate the gray areas and make it black and white. So we know what's expected of us, and we want DMV to know what we expect out of them.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dinkelman.
I just wanted to add, because this gentleman brought up a really good point, there are regulations on the books as far as the environmental requirements. However, because of our current budget situation, we do know that DEQ, their enforcement has been, it's underfunded. So the reality is, my understanding is a lot of as you say, the paperwork goes in, but inspections typically tend to be complaint-driven.
Correct.
Where if a neighbor or somebody, sees something, then they will go out there. I don't know how many inspectors there are statewide. I do know that in the area I used to work in, there was some concerns about water pollution contamination. And I'm not, indicating your industry. I'm just saying there are regulations on the book. It's the issue of enforcement and having the proper funding to do that. That said, I hope that there could be some agreement maybe between DMV and the DEQ, some type of cost sharing, because you're going to be regulated under two different agencies. And so I hope that there can be some work together to make sure that you get the technical assistance you need on the environmental side and also on the for your license side.
Well, basically, we can't write in some of those agreements in these rules, but that is exactly the focus, and that's what we want to get out of this, is we want to educate DMV. If somebody's going to come out and inspect us, we want to educate them, and that's what our job will be, is we want to help give the technical assistance to a DMV person, is we would basically like to have, as part of the requirement, to be an auto recycler in Oregon, that you just maintain the certain standards, and then we would invite DEQ to come out to any facility, because from, we're a large multi-store operation to Hillsborough, I reckon, is a single small single family operation, and it can be done at very little cost, and it's actually, the ironic thing, if you can focus people on their energies, it's easier to do it right than it is to do it wrong, and we just want to educate those people to why it's important to do it right, and they'll become more profitable, and the industry will be better.
Representative Greenland.
Yes, thank you, sir. Representative Mabry raised the question of the proper licensing fee, and following up on what Representative Dinkfelder just said, I wonder, let's see if I can phrase this correctly. Putting some more regulations on the books isn't going to help if the regulations that are there are ignored already. So the real question is, would it be possible to produce enough revenue out of the fees to deal with the inspection issues that you'd like to deal with? And I was just wondering whether you would be interested in working with DMV to produce a high enough level of, say, dedicated fees into inspections so that not only would we add a set of more regulations, but we'd add the resources to make it available to do what it is you really want to do, which is to be out and inspect both licensed and unlicensed companies in this area.
Well, that is, we recognize that. We also feel that by bringing, we want to bring more unlicensed auto recyclers in the fold, which will increase the revenues.
Mm-hmm.
Our goal is not to increase civil penalties, have this bill or have that department run on civil penalties. That is not the goal. Our goal is to, whatever the costs are, if we can have one person, a dedicated, staff member that can look at our industry, our goal would be that our industry could have no civil penalties. That would be the goal. And whatever the costs were incurred, we feel we should absorb those costs. Quite frankly, if it's $5,000 a year, I guarantee we would all choke on that. But there needs to be something reasonable, and the program, if it's run effectively, I think it can be something within everybody's reach.
If I might Representative Greenlee, just interject. We, in our conversations with DMV, we prior to this session beginning, we talked a lot about what it would cost to effectively enforce just the DMV aspect of this, and that was where the doubling of our license fees came in. I know that we've also talked about phasing in, where, you know, maybe this legislation is the first phase, and then there's a second phase that might even address some of Representative Dingfelder's and yourselves when it comes to the DEQ aspect of it. So we've had some of those conversations that this might just be the beginning, but maybe in the future there might be some other opportunities for us to partner with some other agencies on our fees.
Representative Mabry.
I'm just curious. I've been aware that it's various fairs and rodeos or whatever. There's demolition derbies, and I suspect some of those come from your business in some way. But I'm just curious, do you ever put together, you know, bits and pieces from one vehicle to another and have a resale? Or are you involved in selling entire automobiles and therefore would qualify as an automobile dealer?
That's correct. Basically, everybody at this table, we are used car dealers because we do have dealer's licenses. That's part of our business. There's two... The auto recycling industry, there's two distinct areas of the auto recycling industry. There's the scrap driven end of the business, which is jalopy junk, you know, cars, and then there's the late model, you know, high end. I mean, to throw some numbers out, we process about 10,000 cars annually at one of our locations, which is Foster Auto Parts. The average cost of our salvage is close to $4,000 a car is what we pay for vehicles that we process. Those are some, you know, we have a heck of an investment when we're buying a couple hundred cars a month at an average clip of $4,000 a car, that we want to ensure that, you know, we get the most out of that car, and you know, that's why there needs to be the, you know, there's a high dollar value to late model salvage, and we are seen as buyers of late model salvage. A lot of vehicles are going that we aren't buying, and we know who's buying them, and they're not playing by the same rules because they don't have to.
And so, as I heard you right, you pay $4,000 for a wrecked car?
That's the average cost, yes.
How far back do you go? I got some I'd like to see.
No. This is 2002, 2003 vintage.
Any other questions? Representative's honor.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. About 3 or 4 months ago, the police chief down in Woodburn and his group and the FBI broke up a huge Russian mafia. People
yes.
do this to the cars. And
those would be some of the very same cars I'm talking about.
With this, yeah, huge. They were. I couldn't realize, and I still can't remember how big they were with it. Huge, huge. They dealt in millions of dollars worth of this stuff. So if this bill helps, I'm all for it.
And that's what basically the old bill didn't address any of the requirements for, you know, for basic record keeping, for accountability on how do you track the vehicles once you purchase it, and, you know, where do these parts all go. So you know, for the auto theft ring across the country, Oregon is easy pickings.
Can you tell me how many licensed auto recyclers there are?
There are approximately 375. My last list had somewhere around 400, but they told me that was actually a little high, so about 375, I believe, licensed wreckers.
Okay, and just a quick follow-up. You would have no way of knowing...
How many more?
How many unlicensed ones are out there, do you?
No, but the ballpark that I'm getting from the industry is somewhere probably around 30% to 40% are out there unlicensed. But you need to remember that an unlicensed auto recycler could actually be someone that carries a briefcase and operates off the Internet and buying and selling of used parts and components. So, you know, the what you might envision an auto recycler with a yard and a fence, you know, that would be traditional, but if you think of all of the other potential population out there, it could be much greater.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Janet has a question.
The new requirement for a training course, either that the department gives or that they approve, for my meeting, it just appears to come in for renewal, not for original issuance. So they would have a 3-year period to take that course before their first renewal.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And we're advocating that the DMV and or whomever they might deem as appropriate would provide that service.
Just let me interject. Similar to the license requirements of auto dealers. I mean, because the auto recycler is doing some of the very same functions that the auto dealers do when it comes to processing the title paperwork.
Thank you. Do you have some amendments, or you're considering some amendments to this?
Yes. Forgive me for not making it. Kelly Taylor and I had a conversation on Thursday or Friday of last week, and they're putting together some amendments. And it's basically they want to ensure that we're not jumping through any additional hoops than what would seem reasonable to the DMV. So they're taking a look at it, and when they... It sounds like she's going to have those ready for us just any time. But, yes, there will be some amendments.
Okay. No more questions. I thank you for coming today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And with that, we will close the public hearing on 2801. And is there any other business? If not, we are adjourned.